Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber.
Welcome, everyone,
to RCS Rocking Chair Sessions, Volume 112, with artist Freddie Jawayid. And we are excited to be here for the third time. We forgot to press record, and I kind of failed the second attempt. So this is third time's a charm. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Freddie.
Thank you for inviting me again.
I'm really grateful to have you here, and I thank you more than anybody. I feel like we're behind this microphone and don't get to interact with people often when it comes to stuff that doesn't have to do with our artwork, and I think we met you outside of this, not behind the microphone, and you got to interact with us, so you know how goofy and kind of like weird but special and normal we can be.
Oh, cool. I was actually kind of nervous.
Oh, no. Don't be nervous more.
Not anymore.
Not with these goofballs. We were talking about when we first met, Maria.
Yeah, so it was the Product 81 Gallery, which is also called the Annex Gallery. And Freddie did a collaboration with your friend Juan.
Maristani,
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who we haven't interviewed yet.
No, not yet, but he's on the list.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that exhibition and that collaboration.
Well, that exhibition or that collaboration per se is something that was, in that case, it was sort of a one-off. It was the first time we collaborated under that name, which was Grasshopper Spiral. But in reality, you could say that we've been collaborating at a museum level. Basically, I come from exhibition design, and I started working with Juan probably around 2006 or seven, and you know, in the process of doing the things we do in installations, I found that he had a talent, and I started in a way sort of directing him to use his talent in the work environment, and that led to us collaborating in other projects. For example, there was a time that I had a long-running collaboration with two other fellows called Stefan,
yes.
Tugros, and his Kukets, and we had something called 3PQ. And in the early days of that collaboration, Juan was often involved. And so on and off, we've done a lot of, you know, I guess, projects or artwork or whatever together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in this case, we kind of decided to do it more formally, which was never really the case before, meaning formally in the sense that it was just us two working on a project.
Mm-hmm.
And so, oftentimes the way we approach that is that I tend to be more kind of like the spatial guy and, to some degree, the concept guy, and then he, you know, also comes in with his parts of the concept and then does the digital part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it. That's mm-hmm. what you saw.
But it was really, I would say it's hard to describe because it was like so different than any other show that I've seen. It was really like very immersive. Like you came into a space that didn't really look like a gallery at all anymore because it was like, it was dark. And basically the artwork that you saw was projected on different surfaces.
And it was suicide specific. Each space had a particular installation. It's the first one I think like I've seen like that here in South Florida.
Yeah.
It was very impressive. I enjoy the spatial awareness that you have, and then also like the digital imagery that you and your collaborator come up with, because I think that those two are quite separate treatments. You could be successful in digital imagery, but then not necessarily be very aware of, you know, your the space that you're in and how you install something. But having those two together is magic. We were actually, thinking, because I do the post, you're welcome, of course, of doing the post that you have of the digital rendering of that space, or one of the spaces that you had,
yeah.
Which is, it had this trifold like barrier, and I swear to God, it's the first time I have ever seen a projection on three different screens, which I know sounds kind of, maybe I just didn't realize, but it was quite unique that they were, it felt like it was like going through like these dimensions. It was mm-hmm. quite lovely. It was a very
the white,
beautiful gesture.
Kind of like
yes.
room dividers.
And it wasn't like a solid white. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. It was a translucent kind mm-hmm. of like
it's basically
skin.
Curtain material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really yeah. nice. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I was thinking of posting that because, it shows that you think about the space. Like you projected the images, the projection or the digital drawing of the actual space and then the artwork within that space. And that to me shows that you don't just make something and okay, whatever, whoever's gonna hang it on the wall, which is fine because some people do that, but you're actually thinking not even 360. You're thinking 360, you're thinking how is it gonna look almost,
that's pretty much how I
you know?
Work. That's and why when you say
that.
It, when
yeah.
you started off, at least on the first attempt.
No one heard that.
saying
we
that I was a painter. I guess technically I am because that's how I graduated as a painter. I don't think I ever really touched painting after I graduated. I mean,
I draw a lot,
but I don't particularly use the medium of painting that much anymore.
What was it that attracted you to painting to begin with? Because I mean, to kind of like. Major in an area means you have to have some kind of, you know, inkling
well,
or passion for it.
Well, everything's a vehicle,
it.
You know,
yeah.
everything, like, how I got into painting, as I'm pretty sure it's the story with a lot of artists, you know, I started drawing and using materials, I don't know, since I can remember, but I got into painting kind of as an alternative to studying business because I was studying business first. And then I kept taking art electives and a lot of them were drawing and painting and things like that and sculpture. And eventually I was like, okay, well, I guess this is my major. It was sort of...
You preferred it over business.
I can't really say it was planned. You know, it was more like I was a little bit, I guess, ambivalent to it. Yeah.
Switch could be pretty scary, I think,
yeah.
when you go to a serious...
Well, but it wasn't really a switch because I was just doing it all along. And so,
did you take any business classes?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, then I think that helps you now in the
That's
present.
That's how I got it to UM.
Yeah.
yeah.
You were at UM where you got a BFA.
Actually,
then.
Robert, you were mentioning Robert Chambers
yeah.
was my sculpture professor.
No
That's
way.
Amazing.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Now you're here as an equal.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But so now your work is mainly
spatial,
through projection,
I would say.
But it's not just projection, right? It's also like...
Well, I mean, I use a lot of projection now,
mm-hmm.
but I think my work is I don't know, I guess spatial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like dealing with space.
I think mm-hmm. it's a site-specific installation situation
yeah.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you,
yeah.
you do think, but I think a lot. I should have eaten before I came. Sorry, y'all. I believe that I do see some painterly qualities in the work you're still doing now in that composition, obviously. But the preview I did was a image from one of the shows that you did at the Redbridge Studios. Bridge Red Studios. I always reverse those two. Bridge Red Studios, and it was...
That was actually a 3BQ project.
Yeah, that's what I said. It was
yeah.
a collaborative piece.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that there was something painterly about the way that the Saran wrap was stretched and made it look like brush strokes to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the, whether it was clear, whether it was green, or whether it was black, the way that the projection went onto like the ribbed kind of like undulations of the, what
yeah,
it looks like styrene plastic, it made it look so painterly.
We use that material, a lot. I wouldn't say that, you know, all of 3PQ or everything we did at 3PQ used that, but the funny thing about that is that I think it's hard to pinpoint who came up with the idea of using the stretch wrap.
There's three guys, right? There's Sinessa. Stefan,
I think Sinessa was the first one that had the epiphany of using the stretch wrap
mm-hmm.
to create form when we were working in a project in downtown. And then he used it kind of on his own for a little bit. And then we started doing it more and more. And it's interesting that you say that because he was always wrapping forms. And at a certain point, I think it was when I was collaborating, I think that particular piece you're talking about, I think I did it exclusively with Stefan. That's when the sort of the rhythm changed and we were using it more linearly, kind of like, as you say, creating the brush stroke and creating sort of these,
lines for
you know,
space,
the exercise was also always like wrapping that stuff through each other, but never trying, you know, not to touch, because mm-hmm. the minute it touches, it distorts.
It gets stuck, yeah.
Yeah. So then it's a device that we used often after that, yeah.
Beauty in the material, like it's yeah. a different medium, still.
For me, what was interesting is that it was a quick way to sort of create architectural space.
Mm-hmm.
That and a little bit of wood or
it's
metal
like duct tape.
Or whatever. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's kind of like duct tape. Like, it's one of those things.
One of the biggest projects we did was at the Fat Village projects in Fort Lauderdale. We did a piece called Psalm, and it was probably, I think we filled, you know, something like 5,000 square feet with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's huge.
So
it's a warehouse. It's yeah. ginormous. That's yeah. pretty neat.
How long did you do this collaboration with 3PQ, right?
That collaboration lasted about 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah. That's a nice number.
Yeah.
It's so strange because not everybody collaborates as an artist. Like, I mean, you were a painter. So when did that jump happen from being this individual, I'm working on my own stuff, and all of a sudden, like, oh, yeah, I'll collaborate.
I don't want to study business.
Yeah, I'll collaborate with two other guys. How does that leap happen?
It kind of happened just by the fact that we worked together. Yeah, I mean, I got a job. I knew Sanessa from West Palm Beach, actually. And I knew Stefan from working kind of like the art handling gigs. I had first met him in Chicago. And then I got a job at Fort Lauderdale running the crew. And they were one of the first two guys that I hired that I had to kind of like think of people and get them over. Actually, Stefan was already there working with the previous guy, and he kind of like joined mine. And then, strangely enough, that's kind of like where we really became friends, because it was sort of like we knew each other sort of on the outside. And then at the time, Sanessa really wanted to get out of West Palm Beach and get a studio. And Stefan had a studio in North Miami, and he kept saying that there was an empty space available next to his. And one day we decided to go see it, and we got the studio right next to him. And then little by little, we just started working together. I don't know. It was a lot of it was performative. A lot of it was conversations we would record. A lot of it was, just grabbing materials and making parties. And at the beginning, we did a lot of like these sort of drawing parties. But then after that, it just became kind of a little bit more formal. And then we really started getting into sort of a routine about kind of like doing these videotape performance rituals that we would do. And that was that.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. It was like drawing was a gateway for you, and then because I mean performance and conversations, audio, like that's not really painting or something. So you started slowly but surely going outside of what you were used to.
Well, I think by that point I had already kind of started going out. Like I said, it's like sometimes I feel like I probably should go back to painting.
You always just kind of brainwashing to get you know, she's telling you, you're a painter, so you have to paint.
No, but I think
it's
just you
that
learn
I never
the
really
tools.
Thought about it. Like you I never really thought about it in terms of I'm going to stop being a painter and I'm going to become this now. It was just really the flow of things led me to this and led me to that and led me to the other thing. And that's kind of the way I exist, you know?
I don't think you stop being a painter. I just think you find other things that you might enjoy
right.
a little
I don't
bit
think
more.
You stop being
it's
a
still in you. Yeah. You still learn the basics.
I still draw.
You still draw.
Which is sort of painting.
Yeah, I know, but digitally. Can we
no,
talk?
No, not digitally.
You draw by hand first and
yeah.
then digitally?
No, I draw, which is
just
a
straight,
completely
straight up, just
separate
completely.
Practice.
That's nice.
I've exhibited some of them a few years back.
At the Hollywood Art and Cultural Center,
yeah.
yes. I
you
saw,
saw
that
them?
Too. Yeah, it was like a sketchbook, and then you also did the live project.
Yeah.
What do you feel...
what did you draw? Just real quick.
I started getting into this exercise of drawing on pads. And it was mostly because I used to have a full-time job. And part of it is at the time I didn't really have a studio. It did overlap to the time I had a studio, but...
When do you really
but,
have time?
It was like, when do you have time to do stuff? So, mm-hmm. Partly to jog my creative process, what I would do is like, okay, I don't know what to draw, so I would grab a marker and just let a dot bleed through a bunch of pages, and then I would react, and then draw a few lines, and then I'd do something else. I would go through all the pages, or I'd carve through them. It was kind of like these process pads. I would keep them sometimes years.
These exercises for yourself.
Yeah, but eventually, like, some of them would start catching fire, and they turned into drawings. Mm-hmm. And most of them were sort of just very stream of consciousness. Like, I never really thought about, like, or preconceived an idea of, I'm going to draw this, and that's what would come out. I mean, every now and then, okay, I would say, okay, well, maybe I want to take it in this direction. But for the most part, I would abandon, you know,
whatever direction you had. Like,
any direction I had, mm-hmm, for keeping going and seeing what the information on the pad would tell me back. Mm-hmm. Where do I go next? Mm-hmm. And so they're, well, I guess you could say they're journey drawings. And I still do them. They're very meditative.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the word meditative.
Yeah. So the way it works is like you do like this kind of chance first bleed through. That's still the starting point.
It could be a bleed through. It could be anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I like the idea of multiple pages having the same information, because then you can do different things with the information. Yeah.
Multiplicity.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the layered nails. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you painted, because I didn't find any quote-unquote paintings, were they chunky or were they flat?
Okay, I started painting when I went to UM. I had a professor, Brian Curtis, and I also had a little bit of an influence, even though I never took any of his classes, but it was just mostly sort of an intellectual or critique relationship with Darby Bannard. And so I started out pretty much being, you know, kind of like as realist as a painter as I could be at the time. And that's
what
sort
did
of,
you paint?
Just like
still life
portraits, or you know, at a certain point I was painting houses that I found in Coral Gables and things like that. But it was just sort of like, I always felt like I was just painting as an extra, like, just because I could figure it out. But it wasn't like, oh, you know, I'm doing something amazing or anything like that. And then after that, I kind of like started talking to Darby more. And I remember one time he had this guy over from New York. I'm trying to remember his name, but I remember the company was Guerra Paints. And this guy would come, and he had these bags of pigment that he would sell for almost nothing, right? And so Darby basically taught us how to make paint sticks and nice. Our own paints. So
was it like Maria's eyes just shot open because she's
well, like just cooking
it
caustic and
it's
do
so
all these
expensive,
stuff.
And she's always
oil
buying
sticks,
them.
Right?
Or well, I made my own oil sticks.
We'll
yeah.
talk about this when this is over because
no,
Maria,
I'm already like, oh my god.
And so like okay, so then you have all these kind of chunky materials, and so I started making these really heavy-handed portraits, like just layering them wet on wet, and sometimes I would let them dry and scratch through them, and then layer some more. And I started doing that. And then after that, I went on a completely different tangent. I think it was, at this point, I'm being influenced by Robert and by sculpture and by all these things.
Oh.
And so my paintings were, I started like just carving. You know, that's when I first started using a table saw, and I haven't stopped using one since. Like your tables, I mean,
yeah.
with the same table saw. and so
you got addicted to the table saw.
So yeah, so then I started making these sort of paintings where
they were physical,
but I made blocks, and it kind of relates now that I think about it to these drawings, because what I did is I created these blocks, and I would create patterns on the blocks, and then paint them as one painting, but then I'd change the sequence and go back into the painting, mm-hmm. and like that, and that was kind of like my thesis exhibition with those paintings, which I think of all of them, just one of them survives at this point.
Oh no!
Actually, no. One of them is hanging at the English department at you know, the University of Miami.
Yes.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's awesome. We'll have to go visit and check it out and ask them to send us a picture. That's amazing. Yeah, because I feel like it all like it. It's not that it's just one thing. I feel like it all just, like you say, the bleed out. Like it just, it's continuous, and that one starting point can lead to many like potential dimensions or capacity. So I was wondering what your paintings look like, because like I always struggled with the paint thinner, so mine were always very skinny, and I was scared to layer. But I'm like, if you work with layering, I was curious if your paintings also translated to that, and I'm glad that they do.
yeah, there was a lot of layers. Yeah,
that was really great.
But I was always quick at making my layers. Like I wasn't out. I guess when I first started, I tried to do all the sort of the glazing, and I could do it, but I didn't have the patience for it.
You'd rather just
it takes way too long. I think I did one painting.
And the thing is that to me, there weren't, like, I really liked the expression of just the immediacy of painting fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. What, after you graduated, you mentioned that now, like, obviously you work in the field of the arts, that you as a handler, as working as making things, can you talk to us about how you found a job even to begin with that, and how they tired, okay, you have the capacity, you could do it, like what's the process, or is it just like random luck?
Well, I mean, it started out just working as an art handler because I needed, you know, money to paint or draw or whatever. But at one point I started working at the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale full time, and the very first exhibition I worked on, I remember that we had just finished a big King Tut exhibition.
Wow!
And then they blew the entire budget that they made on the King Tut exhibition, paying these exhibition designers and fabricators to do the very next exhibition. And then the very next exhibition after that, I said, instead of paying them, I think I can do that, right? And so pretty much from that point forward, I started designing all the exhibitions, creating all the casework. It was just something that came kind of naturally to me.
But you spoke up. I think it has to be that first step.
Yeah, you have to ask for what you want. It's like, if not, you don't go anywhere. Period. Yeah. So then it was just basically that, and I did that for 7 years.
Nice. There's a number 7 recurrence, I'm just saying.
There's a lot of 7s, yeah. Actually, that and 3PQ kind of parallel. Like, that whole time I was there, I was doing 3PQ. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they parallel pretty much almost evenly. And then after that, I got hired by the History Museum. History Miami, to be their museum designer. And so I started doing that, and I actually kind of found it more interesting because you have these sort of very historical but inanimate objects that are on their own can be kind of boring. And also this content that needs to be put into a context. So it was kind of a fun way to grab all that content and all those images and then create environments with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I can imagine that you had more freedom in that, you know, more like a bigger playing field than in an art museum where everything is kind of like, yeah, the artwork has to be like forefront, you know, you're kind of like...
When you're at the art museum, I mean, in some cases I got to do some designy stuff and I really got into design. And, you know, designing casework and pedestals and platforms and to some degree I would help design the banners and things like that. But you still had to kind of remove yourself from the art.
Yeah.
So it's more like you're creating the environment for these things to exist.
And like almost a stage or something.
Most of the years that I was in Fort Lauderdale, there was actually no curator. So oftentimes there was these shows that would come in, they would give me the content, and I would have to figure out how it was going to be present in the space.
So self-curation.
So there was a little bit of curation and how, you know, this should go there. And, you know, well, no, actually not a little, there was a lot of that. and you know, this is the paint color I should use. And
the pieces would tell you where they go. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that, you know, I went into totally the 3D, designing on the 3D computer thing, and I would overly consider things and see things from like
four or five angles
and things like that.
What program was that? Was that like...
SketchUp.
Mm-hmm. I started using SketchUp. Yeah, we talked about that program.
Yeah, I'm trying to get into like Fusion now, but yeah, SketchUp. and so then after that, when I went to History Miami, the rules kind of changed because I no longer have to be in the background. I can totally just art it up, you know.
Use, yeah, you can imagine.
That's where we used a lot of projection mapping. You know, like for the Hurricane Andrew show, I actually created a hurricane pattern.
Wow.
You know, things like that. So it was a lot of freedom to sort of explore how this content was going to be presented.
Mm-hmm. That's a funny transition. I mean, because you went from like you were white box, you could do what you want, to like the removal of the box so that you could do whatever you want. And then the show that we got to see, it was it was like predetermined, so you have to respond, kind of like your sketchbook and your pages. You have to respond to the space.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm.
Well, that was in essence when you saw that Product 81
gallery space
that show. I mean, I can't say that I invented the projection or multi-layered projection on chiffon. It's something that I have been seeing kind of happen. But I was interested in sort of exploring it myself. And so I approached Juan about the idea of doing it. And it was sort of like, okay, I'm going to draw it this way. And you have to now react to what I've drawn, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what happened there. Mm-hmm. So
a three-dimensional drawing.
I mean, now I'm kind of working on some pieces kind of on my own.
Are they top secret? Can you share?
Well, I mean, you're kind of using those materials, but when I tend to use projection, I go kind of more photographically. There's an exhibition where right now up at what's it called? The Cornell Museum of Art up in
Delray. Yes, I was thinking that, Cornell.
Yeah, and I did a collaboration with Janina Copiano DeWin, mm-hmm. and so I did the projection part. And in the projection, in this particular instance, I used footage that I took myself and manipulated myself. So it isn't so much the digital drawing as it is photographic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which actually that's one of my minor was photography.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So the actual, and was it like traditional film, black photography, and white film? Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. Back when we used to be in the dark room. Yeah.
And we still have a dark room here at the Bakehouse, maybe one of the few ones remaining, but we are still punching in hours and chemicals.
How long is your show up at Cornell, the collaboration that you have with Janina?
I think it comes down late September or October.
Okay, great. So people still have time to go by and mm-hmm. see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. cool. Mm-hmm. Maria?
Well, we have to talk a little bit about these audio tables too, I feel like, because sometimes I feel like that the, you know, when you fabricate something for a show, that is even just the design of it or the functionality of it is so artistic too that I have to say that
it crosses over.
It can't really, I feel like you're doing so much for other people too, right? Mm-hmm. You're putting so much of your vision and creative energy into it. And it was really like Elisa and I had this crazy idea to put like 25 audio recordings of 25 sessions all together.
But we had no idea how to do it.
We had no idea how. We were like struggling with all kinds, giving it up.
Yeah, we're like, okay, this is not going to happen for us.
Oh, really?
We were giving up. Like, I was just saying like, listen, Elisa, I would love to do that, but I cannot do that. I'm just not going to be able to do that. And then Anthony supported us and got you on board and you just did it.
Yeah.
And it was like in no time. Like, I feel like...
It was miraculous.
So, yeah, that was about I think from the time we talked about it to they were built, maybe a week and a half. Yeah.
I know. And it's you did insane. The Judy Chicago fireworks.
Well, I didn't do the fireworks.
The extension,
I did the
structure.
I was hired to do the structure.
Yeah.
But that was their design.
Yeah. But so how does that work in your head? Like, how do you...
Does it still feel like you?
And is it like...
Oh, I think there's definitely me in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that is part of my work.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that is part of my work even when I work as me, right?
Yeah.
So when I'm approached about anything, I don't know if to call it the designer, but the designer definitely opens, you know, his head and applies himself. It isn't like, oh, I'm just doing it to make a few bucks. It's like I can't work that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, you guys or Anthony came to me with you know, what was the concept and what was needed, and then I talked to you, and then it wasn't exactly a leap. It was sort of something that I did at a smaller scale before, and it was like, well, we just have to repeat that times 25.
And you did.
And we did, and we did. So,
yeah, it's taking that. It's like the one little, it's the little bloop. It's a little, the dot, and then you just, like, make of it what you will within the parameters, and I think that is the artistry of it too.
And I really like the idea of using the linear design of the tables and that you could, it would expose
certain
things.
And the inside of the box. The actual, it was kind of, parts of it were kind of scandy. I kind of enjoyed like the box within the box and how things were lined up. So it's not fully removed is what I'm saying of who you are.
Yeah, and it was like also like the functionality of it, you know, like how all the holes came kind of together and all the equipment was kind of like, you know, hidden in a way. But it was,
Spatial awareness.
It just really made our show like so much more special. And it was like, it was like your, you know, it was your artwork in it, basically.
I feel like
you're
the 26 artists in that show.
We should have
with three
sculptural
pieces.
And when you have the next exhibit, just put the tables back in.
Yeah, right. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have, we're going to put a painting in there in that show.
I'm not going to limit
you
to whether
paint
or not it's
something.
Before we commence, we were talking about, or at least I was, I like to pronounce the name somewhat correctly. And we were saying Juwayed. Juwayed. Where does that name come from? Because you were born in Venezuela.
Yeah.
You arrived when you were how old?
Here?
Yeah. To Miami.
The first time when I was 7.
Wow. Once again, 7. Sorry, I can't.
The number keeps coming up. Yeah.
Numerology. Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with me today.
1979.
With a 7 in it.
1979. That's a good year. That's when
that
I was born.
That is a good year. When Maria came into this world. I wanted to ask... It just escaped me. Maria, help me pick the tangent.
Tell us a little bit about how you grew up.
You started with the last name.
The last name. Yeah.
My father's Lebanese.
Nice.
So
do you eat the food? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love the food.
Oh, I love the little...
I never picked up the language, but I love the food.
I love the kidbi and the little... Oh, it's so good. My best friend is... her family. Oh, the food's delicious.
Yeah.
What do you remember from Venezuela? Because I think 7 is still a good number to remember something.
Well, I originally came when I was 7, and then I went back in the 80s, and I did my high school years at an American school. And then I came back in 1990. And I have pretty much been here since. There was a little bit of flying back and forth, but yeah.
You always go back.
I haven't gone back in over 10 years.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to go back now.
Yeah.
What do you remember from Venezuela in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s?
It was actually a very beautiful place. You know? It was a beautiful city. It was very cosmopolitan. There was...
Were you in Caracas?
I'm talking about it in past tense when I shouldn't. It is a beautiful place. It's just in chaos. Right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, at least in the 80s when I went back, you know, there's the influences of Soto and Cruz Diez. And, you know, those guys are major for me. Mm-hmm. And you know it was just a very cosmopolitan and cultural place. It was awesome.
And I think in terms of structures, it's really it's fascinating to see all of these kind of like just eras coexist in one space. Because I'm pretty sure Caracas, once again, like Mexico, it was like you were
not as much as Mexico, because Mexico, I think Mexico has a lot more history than a place like Caracas. Caracas is essentially a city that really came to be in the way that it is cosmopolitan under Pérez Jiménez in the 1950s and 60s. So it's definitely very young and very modern city.
Mm-hmm. But do you still see the time frames of like from the colonial to the 60s
the
and
colonial.
The 70s?
Yeah.
Obviously not the way all the way back to like the Aztecs and the Mayans, like not Mexico like that, but like you could see the different areas in the buildings.
You can, but not in the way that it's in Mexico. In Mexico, you just see the layering all around.
No, that goes way, way, way back.
You know, mm-hmm. And in Venezuela, there are parts that are just pretty much the cookie cutter 1950s architecture from that you would see here.
No temples with skulls.
Yeah. but beautiful. The Central University, La Universidad Central de Venezuela, it's a gorgeous place. It's all in, you know, it's basically, it's got a lot of Art Deco, and then it went into more, I guess, modern practices in architecture, and then it's got the Aula Magna, which is gorgeous. That's the amphitheater that has the Calder pieces that were essentially, you know, created to solve an acoustical problem. So there's a lot of gems.
I mean, going back as a teenager, I could only imagine.
Mid-century gems in Venezuela. Yeah.
Incredible. How did you make the decision to go back to Venezuela to go to an American school?
That's a crazy story. I moved around a lot with my mom.
So in general?
I lived in Westchester first, and then at one point, out of the blue, we went to Albany, New York, which is where she's from. Uh-huh. So she's like, you know, Albany, Irish Italian, right?
Whoa! And she met your father in Venezuela.
Yeah,
who was he was from Lebanon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I went to Albany. I didn't really like it at the time. Maybe if I were older, I would have appreciated it better.
Mm-hmm. Was it cold?
It was very cold, and it was a bit of a culture shock for me. So at a certain point, I just decided that I was going to go live with my dad for a while, and that's how that happened.
Yeah. Mm. But you went to, you decided to go to an American school, so
I
you were...
I decided so that I wouldn't have to do all the transitioning into Spanish and all that.
Yeah.
Middle ground.
Yeah.
Middle ground. When did that happen, that you first got, like, an idea that you could be, like, an artist, or that you're artistic, or that you, like, even just like to do artsy stuff?
Yeah, you mentioned
when
the drawing, but I'm like...
I mean, I can't really pinpoint it. I just always...
You were always doing it, right?
I was always doing it, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess there was always sort of a stigma in my head, maybe probably more from my dad than my mom. I don't know where it came from, but it was like I was trying to avoid being an artist.
You tried really hard not to be an artist. Yeah.
I think that the parental, the dad stigma is always like, get a responsible job. You have to feed yourself. Yeah, study X, Y, and
Make
Z.
Make some money first.
Yeah.
At the same time, the funny thing is, I mean, my mom was a little bit of an artist, but I think I get a lot of that from my dad.
So he was an artistic one.
Mm-hmm. He was artistic in a different way. He was always like reinventing his space, and he's always, you know, kind of, you know, decorating his area and
moving
getting historical
around.
You know, he likes to collect a lot of historical objects and things like that, you know.
So the curation started, observation of curation started really young.
Except totally different styles. Like, he's just over, it's like too much, it's over. Can't do it.
Is it like Middle Eastern, like with a lot of carpets and a lot of like...
It's kind of colonial Middle Eastern, yeah. Like, uh-huh. It's a lot of the Venezuelan colonial stuff, but it's just...
Like a lot, super layered.
Yeah.
It's so funny how...
I need more space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens, I think, generationally. Like, maybe one generation is like really just congested, and then the next one's like, whoa, I gotta breathe. And then the next one's like, no, that's too much space, I need to put more stuff in it. And it just like regurgitates itself.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
A lot of like, he likes a lot of this Baroque stuff and heavy
stuff. Yeah, with the
stuff.
Frills, and you're more like the linear, the clean, the lines, the simplicity, but
minimal with
purpose.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The functionality of it, too.
Yeah. What kind of artwork would your mom make when you said she was slight of an artist, like a little bit?
Well, my mom won drawing competitions when she was in high school and things like that.
Oh, that's me. Yeah.
But then she never really pursued it after that.
Life.
Yeah.
How did you decide to go to like to come to Miami? I guess after you graduated in Venezuela, right? From high school, right?
Well, actually, I actually sort of got, I wouldn't say kicked out, but I left school.
Ooh, in Venezuela?
Yeah. And
I love how you're smiling from ear to ear while you say this. You're like, I kind of got
a bad day.
Yeah.
So I came here and I actually took a GED.
Good.
And got my high school that way. And,
awesome.
Then I went to Miami-Dade for 2 years. And then from Miami-Dade, I transitioned over to UM.
And did you have family here in Miami then? Was you?
Yeah, my mom, and, mm-hmm. and now I have, you know, a few brothers and sisters that have come.
They live in Miami now too.
They all live up in Boca. But
in Boca.
I can
drive up and visit. Are you the youngest or the oldest?
That's a weird or strange thing because I'm both. I'm my mom's youngest and my dad's oldest.
Weird.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got both worlds.
I got both worlds. Yeah.
That's really cool. So, when you think of your next projects that you're doing, like the concepts that you're working out right now, where do you think you're going artistically?
I don't know. It's hard to define. I've worked a lot in collaboration. Mm-hmm. I've worked for example with Gustavo Matamoros and a lot of his projects.
The installation you did at the Ulite Arts was really quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, that was you.
Yeah.
He did the installation. You had no idea.
No.
Does it not say Freddy? Like, that's what I'm starting to realize. I see your stuff, and I recognize
it. Space. Mm-hmm.
The black space.
No,
I did the black space.
Because that was incredible.
The exhibition before that were
the screens.
Were the screens.
Partitions separating the space with sound.
The one that he did specifically in the gallery.
I'm not sure.
It was a clearer smash, but it had color. You have a style.
Yes, chiffon. Yeah.
But what I saw was just before he left, basically Ulite, right, the art center at the time, this incredibly black room, right? It was like we worked on that for months.
Yeah,
it was incredible. The sound experience in that room and this.
Yeah, there was a lot of acoustic.
I don't know. I quite have seen anything like that before. Like that was really, really beautiful. I didn't know you were working with him on that too.
I worked on that, and then we probably started working on collaborations way back. Actually, I curated a show at the Museum of Fort Lauderdale, and I had met Gustavo through the same guy that I visited in Germany, Shariar Ate. Mm-hmm. And so when I was putting that show together, it was all about basically installation art. Mm-hmm. And so I brought him in to do a sound piece, except we kind of wound up, I wouldn't call it a collaboration officially, but we collaborated in doing the piece that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it started.
Mm-hmm.
So we still are, you know, sort of talking or making attempts to continue collaboration. So I obviously like the sort of the collaboration aspect, solving problems, working with other people, kind of figuring out a direction. I like tangents, I guess. Mm-hmm. So me personally, I guess the one constant is that I always draw. I don't necessarily exhibit them, but I draw. And then with the stuff that I'm doing, I'm still working presently with the chiffon and the projection. I'm going to do a project at NSU.
Mm-hmm.
At the gallery at NSU, and I'm doing another project with Janina again at Palm Beach State College.
Mm-hmm. And at NSU, you're collaborating with...
No, I'm doing that one on my own.
Go Freddy.
What is it going to be about, do you know?
If you can't talk about it, we understand. Don't push on.
I guess I could... the title I'm running with, which is actually a title of one of my old drawings, is Olvido, Culpa, Memoria.
Forget? Culpa is like a shoot,
The thing is that it doesn't really translate that well because it's those words, but they sound very different.
I feel like I hear the word with a period at the end of each, so like there are three separate things, but they could go together. So like
one
forget,
of them is sort of a wall,
fault, and then memory.
But culpa, mea culpa, is kind of like my
fault,
wrongdoing, right?
Yeah, my fault.
Culpa, yeah. Yeah.
Mea culpa mea. That's right. Kind of
it's a trilogy.
Too.
It's like a trilogy. Yeah.
What's the last word?
Memoria, memory.
Memory. Yeah. Well, we're triggered. We're excited to see it.
Mm. And it's going to be projections. And
it's going to be a form with projection.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a span of dates where that might be?
That's I can't remember them off the top of my head, but I have to install it in September, mid-September.
Okay, cool. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's coming around the corner.
Soon. Yeah. Uh-huh. Do you freelance, Freddie? Do people approach you and be like, hey, I have this project idea. What are your rates? Is that like a side thing you do besides working specifically for?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my business, yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, because you're not working for an institution right now. You're not like in fixed...
Right, like I've been working a lot with the ICA. We recently completed the did you see the Torres Falsas exhibition at the ICA with the screen walls? That was actually a design by a Mexican architect, but we executed the design.
Did that take place during Basel?
Huh?
Did that take place during Art Basel, or was it afterwards?
No, this is currently up at the ICA.
Oh, it's up right now.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what you were installing when we had the show at Oliver's.
Yes.
We have to go and see that.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. So I do. I guess special designs or projects for museums or.
Those business classes came in handy after all.
Whoever might need them.
Yeah, because I think. Yeah, because I think like this way you actually have a lot of more freedom to do like a lot of different projects, right? Than working for like only one institution in a way that.
Yeah.
I like that.
And we were talking earlier about your trip to Europe, and that was also part.
How is that for you?
That was also born out of a project from the ICA. Mm-hmm. We were called sometime last, I would say last year in March or thereabouts, and we're putting an exhibition of Larry Bell together, and we kind of need a wall of water. So we figured out how to make a wall of water. I mean, sort of figured it out. There was a few kinks in it.
but that was what you showed in Basel, or was that it?
Yes, that was.
Because here the ICA was also a show, right? But it was like the...
Yeah, it was a wall of water with I mean, there were several pieces, but in the piece that we helped design and fabricate was a water projection, or mm-hmm. let's say like almost like a rain projection. Mm-hmm. So then they decided or Hauser and Wirth decided that they wanted to take that piece to Art Basel, mm-hmm. and that's how we just traveled to Europe.
So you got to travel and you got to see Vienna, by the way.
And then we hung out for a while. Yeah.
It's amazing. I love the pictures you were posting. I was like, this is so beautiful. Take us with you, Freddie. question, because I am a bit of a nerd when it comes to these. In terms of shop and your setup in order to create not just your own artwork but these other commissions, what does your setup look like? Like, what are tools that you have in your arsenal? Like, what is your space? Like, how do you have it configured?
Well, strangely enough, right now, I wouldn't say I have a space.
Oh.
I've been working a lot with Stefan, and he has a space, and so most of my tools are there. And the way that kind of works is there's a big outside area, and most of our tools, we've designed them to sort of just kind of open up, and we make our shop outside, and do our business there. I'm in the process of trying to find a space, or because it gets to a point where that's not so comfortable anymore. But in terms of tools, obviously the table saw, the chop saw, the
like wood chop.
Basically a lot of wood chop tools, and obviously the computer. But I think also it's just a matter of just managing resources. Like if something needs to be done a certain way, then I find the shop or the guy that can do it for me. You know? Mm-hmm. And usually it requires that I create the design and then
the rendering,
and then for example, I know Andrew from Dos Alas has a CNC shop or a CNC router. I often work with right inside of the shop of Faulkner Plastics, things like that. So
I think it goes to show you the non-space is no excuse. Like, you still make it work.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can make art as a nomad.
Yeah. Totally. I love that word. I consider myself a nomad right now.
But the thing is that even when we worked at the museum, we had a shop, but a lot of the work happened, on the spot. Mm-hmm. You know?
Cool. So. Maria has one final question for you, Freddie.
The very last question. Unless you have any other announcements that you want to say.
Or shows that are upcoming.
There is at the NSU.
NSU.
In Fort Lauderdale in September.
Mm-hmm. And then not at the museum, at the gallery. At the college, yeah.
At the college
gallery, yeah. And then the other one?
The other one is the one at the Cornell Museum.
That one's up till September.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another one.
What was the other one? Oh, gosh.
That was coming up also.
Oh, the one at Palm Beach State College.
Yes.
Palm
Beach. Okay. Yeah. So a couple of opportunities for our listeners to see your work.
Yeah.
And our very last question, as you know, you've been sitting in a magical rocking chair. Yeah. Maybe you don't know that.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure he does at this point.
You have it grants you three wishes.
Oh.
You can wish for anything and everything.
Yeah.
But you have to say them out loud for it to come true.
Oh, my.
These are the rules of the rocking chair. So what are your three wishes?
I never got to any of that part in any of the recordings.
I know.
Maria is so excited right now.
I just called him. I caught him cold. That's what we would say.
I think people stop halfway like, oh, let me listen to what this is like. And then they just stop halfway and they don't make it to the end. They're always
but
surprised.
But we had a whole room with wishes in the show.
Totally.
But you didn't get to that room. I installed that myself. Yeah, that was in the rocking chair.
It was a sound
chair
wishes
was.
Room. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I did see them in the back wall. That's
in
right.
In the back.
Okay.
But you didn't wishes. Listen to that because I installed that.
Oh, man, I'm unprepared. Three wishes. So I have to make three wishes out
of
wishes.
But
any
you
type of wishes?
On the spot,
anything,
whatever you want.
Anything. Really, like.
But you have to say it out loud.
You can do it like a doodle, like a dot.
Three wishes.
But you only have three, so.
Well, I guess the first one is I wish my kids a wonderful life, whatever that may be.
That's nice.
Two, I'd like to be, I'd like to retire in Berlin. That's just now.
He's really fond of Berlin.
Who knows what'll be next year? And then, just happiness to everybody in the room and everybody around us, you know.
Oh, one for yourself, and then one for your kids, and then one for everybody. You're a good guy. I like that. I know that was the last question, and I'm supposed to say thank you. Maria's laughing because she knows what I'm about to do next.
Uh-oh.
Are your kids artistic too? Both of them?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you take them around to you to like installs and like shows and?
Well, I take them to museums. There have been times where they kind of had to come work with me, sort of.
You're like, here's a sketchbook, doodle.
Yeah, but especially my daughter just. I think it's more like me in the sense that she just started doing it
on her own
right off the bat. And I think she's more like me in the sense that she was the quiet kid in the corner always with a sketch pad or now it's an iPad. Yeah. And then my son, I think, is creative in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like he's more verbal and he recently had a play and he
more
was
theatrical.
Like, he was more theatrical. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for stopping by. We scheduled you a long time ago and we're glad that you're finally here. Yay.
Thank
and
you for having me.
Thank you for your patience for the three times of pressing record.
No problem.
It was not seven.
We're going to think and thank God it was not seven. Seven is a special number. Maria, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lisa.
We'll see you all next week.
Thank you so much again, Freddie. I feel like you're such a generous person, you know.
With your time, with everything, with yourself.
With sharing your knowledge and your wisdom and your, you know, sensibilities. And working with you is always a pleasure. So
thank you.
I hope you get some time to work on your own artwork, but I hope we can collaborate soon again, too. Alrighty.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
Thanks, Freddie. Alrighty.
Thank you, guys, to our listeners. Bye. Oh, an update. If you have a chance and you like what you heard, there are other updates on our website. We have a podcast page now. We love to support local. There's about, I think, 8 or 9 of us that have different podcasts and interview different creatives
of
South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to our website and you check out that page and you want to learn about other artists that we may not have interviewed, because let's be honest, there's a lot of artists out here in South Florida, you could click on those other podcasts and check out to see if you find the person that you're interested in and maybe they're on there. Okay, that's about it.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.